If you are a teacher, parent, administrator, student, and/or anyone who loves reconnecting children with nature, and you want to figure out how to cultivate learning gardens and nature-based curriculum, then this is the podcast, the Outdoor Classrooms Podcast. My name is Victoria Hackett. I am the founder of OutdoorClassrooms.com and the Secret Gardens Nature Classes. I love witnessing the magic that happens when children are playfully learning outdoors. Observing the return of wonder and curiosity when children are interacting with nature is pure magic. This is the podcast that is going to help you capture children's interest and give you not only inspiration, but some real life strategies that are going to help you figure out how to use the outdoor space, your outdoor space, as a teaching tool, so you can enlighten the playful learning experience for young children. Welcome to our Outdoor Classrooms community. Julie Brahms is an earth-centered psychotherapist, certified forest therapy guide, meditation practitioner, teacher, and author of the New York Big Book Award winner, The Nature Embedded Mind, How the Way We Think Can Heal Our Planet and Ourselves. She is also the co-founder of Elemental and Nature Informed Wellness Center. Her psychotherapy practice integrates traditional therapy, eco-psychology practices, meditation, and the latest advances in the field of neuropsychology. Certified by the Association of Nature and Forest Therapy, she leads nature immersion experiences, classes, and workshops, taking people out of doors to reciprocally heal themselves and the rest of nature. She is dedicated to social change and environmental sustainability through reestablishing our intimate connectedness with our living earth. Without further ado, Julie Brahms. Hello, everybody. We have Julie Brahms here. Thank you for coming and joining us, Julie. And she is the author, as I mentioned, of The Nature Embedded Mind. And it's just a fabulous read. And Julie, I just want to just jump right in and ask you a little bit about yourself. We sort of did that in the bio, but I also want to know a little bit about what inspired you to write this beautiful book, Nature Embedded Mind.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here and to share what I can about this. It's a deep, deep love of mine. It's a deep subject. It's, you know, kind of simple and difficult all at the same time, which is part of the reason why I did write the book. I've been a mental health professional for 34 years now.
Wow.
Just counting. But, and, you know, I have, you know, through my profession, I feel like my heart is always in understanding both what makes people suffer, you know, what causes suffering for people, but most importantly, what alleviates it, what makes us healthy and happy and feel comfortable in our own skin and, you know, able to feel free to be who we are. Through my 34 years, you know, I have gone through many different specializations based on things that, again, I felt were sort of answering this deeper question. I've done a lot of work with death and dying. My profession in general has woven in mindfulness as a kind of we call it like a transdiagnostic tool. So I am a practitioner of Vipassana meditation. I'm a teacher as well. And that kind of knowing how to begin to separate out, really be able to distinguish being from thinking, sensing from ruminating. You know, these are skills that, right, this is an ancient medicine. This is not a new thing. It's just that science has kind of pulled it out of the religion and taken the heart of it. And so through that practice and education, you know, it just sort of inevitably I should say, you know, like originally also, I'm an earth lover. People would say to me, you know, oh, you're a therapist. You must really love people. And I'd go, well, you know, I do. I love people individually as a species. I'm not too happy with us, you know, but I have this love of nature and love of the earth. And I thought to myself, I really want to help people stop hurting themselves. And so this sort of dovetailed about, I don't know, maybe 10 or so years ago. Actually, it might be longer than that. Whoa. It might be like more like 20 years ago. Whoa. Okay. 20 years ago, it dovetailed and I started to get this, almost this, you know, like chills, or I would cry when I thought about what can I do to help this planet with my skill set. So as I was making my way through all of the wonderful pioneers and mavericks in the field of eco-psychology, I realized I'm not a maverick. And every time I would speak with these people, I would say, well, how do I do this? How do I bring this into my practice? What is it? And they would say, you know, you can do whatever you want. And I just, for me personally, that felt scary to me. And so I kept on the search for there must be a how to do this that's, again, being a scientist or science-minded person, a standardized, repeatable, you know, science behind it kind of method that I could use to help people. And then serendipitously, I came across Amos Clifford's work. So he brought me together with the how, and I became a certified forest therapy guide. And really learned the difference between being in the role of therapist and being in the role of the guide, where nature is the therapist. And then is when I said, I have to write this book because my colleagues don't know this. And it's so accessible. It's so accessible. I mean, shockingly accessible and fun and easy to do. I felt like I wanted my colleagues to, one, clock the fact that this separation is only psychological and it is a psychological issue slash problem, and that there is this way that has been very reliably created that we can all bring into our practice and help everyone reconnect their mind. And so that's the piece I think that is a little slippery, because knowing that you're part of nature is not the same as experiencing yourself as part of nature.
Right. I can see that. Yes. And I got that when I was reading. It was interesting. It was exactly that. And so when you say nature embedded mind, what does that really mean in sort of everyday terms? So you're kind of sharing, you've written this book and you're sharing it with your colleagues, and the folks that are listening to this podcast are probably educators and most likely, how would you describe that, exactly what you just did beautifully, but maybe in layman's terms?
Thank you for that question. And I do want to also expand that this isn't just for psychologists. You know, sometimes people leap to that assumption. I do have a special shout out to my colleagues, because I think that's an important as part of our ethics. But this is for anyone who wants to be sovereign in their own mind. So anyone. And then anyone who thinks of themselves maybe as having influence over someone else, that you want to help them back into right relationships. So educators, healers, moms, dads, friends, you know, anybody that wants to demonstrate that this way is possible. Okay. So layman's terms, this is where there's a big, another gap, which I think is, it's part of the trap mentally, because our language, our culture's language, Western mind, doesn't have language for what I'm trying to say. Like if we talk to an Aboriginal person, we talk to a First Nations person, anyone Indigenous, their language speaks to this relationality. So when I'm speaking our language to our mind, it's, again, it's like this little...
Oh, wow. I just got chills. Yeah.
But I am constantly trying to figure out how do I get it? Because once you get it, once you see it, you can't unsee it. And that's mm-hmm. the idea of it. So I was thinking this morning, remember this movie, Dr. Doolittle? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was one of my favorites as a kid. But his premise is, right, if we could talk to the animals, right, if we could, that implies that we can't.
Mm. And that's what you talk about in the book in terms yeah. of our language, our own.
Our language keeps us separated.
Separated.
And that's part of what.
Part of the mindset.
Yes. And so we have to unlearn this language. And I think we have to sort of develop new language.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I just want to just connect that to educators.
Yeah.
And when we have educators that are working with children outdoors, to really think about what you were talking about in terms of just how we are referring to nature.
Yes.
And are we in that connected mindset? Like, or are we, are, is our language in a disconnected just subconsciously? Like,
it is. It's, yeah. Yes, it's an implicit bias. But also I wanted to say this idea, the implication that we can't talk implies that we don't. And that's another false. We are communicating 24/7. We
Amazing.
Don't know.
Yeah.
We don't. We have forgotten the language. We've forgotten. But I put this in the book because it's just so, it's first, there's so much science behind it, but it's also, you know, like you think, oh, of course. Our relationship with trees, we've co-evolved with them, right? So our bodies biologically are interrelating with trees so much to the point where if you're next to a tree, it starts to read your immune system. It starts
right,
to read
right,
you
yeah.
and see what's missing and start sending that out to you. When you look at a tree, when they've analyzed a tree, okay, so they do this through phytoncides. And when they've analyzed where the phytoncides are being emitted, it's right here at the nose level of a human being.
Hmm.
So it's like biologically, we can see that, right? Like we're not separate from, we're embedded in this web.
Nature embedded mind. Yeah.
Right. So it's just our Beautiful. Mind that's separated, which is why I used that title, because we are sort of understanding that our mind and our body are one thing. I think we keep slipping in and out of that because we've had these great philosophers telling us that, nope, the mind is separate.
Mm-hmm.
And we're reclaiming that. The mind is not separate. The mind is the body. The body mm-hmm. is the earth. The mind is the earth. So, yeah.
So you really just answered my next question, which was you talk about the healing ourselves and the planet and how those two are connected. So what happens to our thinking when we are disconnected? So when we are living in that world of disconnection of nature, what happens to our thinking and well-being? And
right. So what happens to us is our nervous system is dysregulated. All the time
yeah.
because we're living in non-reality. We're thinking and behaving in ways that are delusional. I mean, it's a strong word, but I think it's true. And so our set point, what we've come to believe is normal, this is how I feel, is, you know, it's a set point that's dysregulated. So
right.
in that dysregulation, we feel more anxiety, we feel more depression, we feel a longing, we feel a loneliness, we feel an emptiness, we feel all kinds of things that then we seek to, whatever, medicines, self-medication, you know, addictions, all the things we're trying to kind of clamp down. What if we are back in relationship, and actually relationship, not just spending time outside, that's good. And it does help, but being back in our full mind self that can communicate. I'm not going to say talk to the animals because that's anthropocentric again. That's, you know, but we communicate. We communicate through temperature. We communicate through vibration. We communicate through light and dark, through movement. I mean, we're communicating. And when we can remember that they, when you practice this, you'll see how they respond. You know, you have to suspend your disbelief. Again, that's part of that mental trap. But if you suspend your disbelief and you spend enough time, you begin to see that they are responding and they are also initiating conversation. And then you understand how to respond back in a way that's like, we're not going to become the other species. We're human, but a human has a capacity to infuse the conversation with something. And I think oftentimes what it is love.
Fascinating. So again, you've answered the next question.
Okay.
Can reconnecting nature actually change how we make decisions or relate to others? And you just described that. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
And then to end with love as the cherry on top is really the essence. And what I want to do now is bring that to education and children.
Yeah.
So how does this nature-embedded way of thinking begin in children? How can we get, you know, we are encouraging more outdoor classrooms and we're training teachers to teach outdoors and to make these connections. But you, this is a whole deeper conversation, which I so appreciate. Is there any way that we can begin with children?
Yeah, I think this is such an important topic, because children, all of us as children, we are connected. We're born this way. This is our birthright. We have to be trained away from it. We have to be shamed out of it, or, you know, directed away from what a child naturally knows how to do. So the youngest children, I said in my book, if you have the advantage of having a young, like a toddler kind of person in your life, let them be your forest guide, because they would naturally take invitations from the land and you can follow them, do what they do. So I think as an adult, the responsibility is kind of cleaning your own mind so that you don't accidentally contaminate their mind. You know, and think of it in ways like, I just said this the other day, you know, how we just say something like, the kids are playing in the soil and you say, oh, don't put that in your mouth. You know?
Yeah.
Okay. I understand. I'm a parent. I get it. But also, is there a better way to say it?
Right.
That isn't like, don't do that. Don't touch it. Don't taste it. Don't know it. Don't have a relationship with it. Is there another way that we might language it? And I think this is all discoverable. So I hope that this is not a question that I'm answering, because I'm not the authority. We are all authorities about this. So I hope this lets your listeners' minds start to go, how would I do that? You know, how would I encourage relationality? That the soil is a living being that we can put in our mouth, but what, you know, like just sort of thinking it in terms of, this is your grandmother. You know, you can kiss her. Maybe you don't want to swallow her or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, that we're thinking these are, and this is truly mind blowing, you know, like these are ancient relatives that we live with all the time. It's the water that we drink, the water coming out of our faucet is the one and only water that's been here since before we were here. I mean, ancient ally.
Yeah. So
how do we honor that, remember it? And then I think, again, it's a very personal journey. What does that do inside you? Oftentimes in the beginning, it causes people to cry. to weep. There is grief around having forgotten that.
Mm-hmm.
And then knowing there is nothing lost, like everything is still here. We do it now, you know?
So with that, so I love how you described, if you have a young child in your world, to let them be your nature guide.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it that children naturally understand about that connection to the natural world that we as adults often lose? Is it that we want to be kind of conscious that we're not contaminating? What is it that we lose as we get older?
Yeah, what our culture teaches us is that nature is an object.
Yeah.
They're soulless. They're unintelligent. Of course, that's tipping, thankfully. That's changing. But we've been living in this paradigm of human supremacy. Like, this is what defines civilization, is that humans are separate from and superior to and have dominion over and can do whatever we want, that nature is here to serve the human race or the human species. And then, you know, of course, there's more distortion among human beings. Now it's not just all human beings, but certain human beings are at the top, and then certain genders are at that top, and whatever. You know, this hierarchical structure is the problem. That's a fantasy. We are, Gloria Steinem, I'm going to say, linked, not ranked. So imagine that we are linked, not ranked. And you start to see, you know, where we've gone wrong and what needs to be dismantled.
Yeah.
But what the kids know, or what kids do, is they don't think of nature as an object.
Yeah.
Right? And so times, like, maybe they will, it seems that they're anthropomorphizing it. And I think that people try to dissuade that. And that's true. But again, as educators, or, you know, anyone with a child around, if you could honor, this is a living, sentient being. It's not like a human. What is it like? What do you notice about the grass? What do you see? But because they're not, they haven't had as much time in this thinking of, I can't say that I heard the grass say something, because then I'll be made fun of.
Right. You know, absolutely.
This is how we train ourselves now. We use ridicule and humiliation and shame and
to get to that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd love to, at this point, to get to that outdoor classrooms connection.
Okay.
So how can outdoor classrooms support the development of a nature embedded mind?
Okay, so I would say, I mean,
load.
No, this might be, again, this might be preaching to the choir. You might already do many of these things. But what I've learned about letting nature be the teacher or the therapist is that you set up invitations for the human being to explore their relationship with the other than human. So, for example, one of the first invitations that we do to help people come back, first of all, into their body, is this kind of sensory, like we might say, what does this place sound like? What do you hear? What's the farthest sound you can hear? What's the closest sound you can hear? Is there a melody? Is there a rhythm? You know, just to begin to attune to just hearing the place, the soundscape. That's a word that Jon Kabat-Zinn uses in his book, Coming to Ourselves. Tuning into the soundscape and then adding your own sound, noticing what sound are you making in the soundscape? Because we want to re-embed ourselves. You're here too. Like, we're good at observing, like as if it's a TV show or a zoo, you know, don't touch that. Don't, you know, but this is like remembering. So what sound You know, maybe it's the sound of your own breath, sound of swallowing, or maybe you want to make a sound. You can vocalize, you can sing, you can, you know, add a rhythm. So adding your sound into the soundscape. So you hear the bird, you hear yourself, you hear the wind. You know, it's all matted together.
Yeah.
Then asking, how do you like that? If you notice that you like that, you know, just, it's a little bit different with kids. With adults, we say, is there anything pleasurable about that? That doesn't really work with kids too much. It's not quite, but something, the teachers will know what's a better, better than me. What is the swap out? But it's really understanding that this is fun. I like this. This feels good to hear. And then we go through touch, smell, taste, you know, even taste, where it could be like sip the air through as if it was through a straw. You know, do you pick up any flavor, or is there flavor in your mouth from something you've drank or eaten? Just always adding yourself in. It's dissolving that false barrier, like taste your skin. We use the word curiosity. If you're curious enough, you might want to taste the rock or the bark. You know, obviously the guide is also there to keep everyone who's unfamiliar with it protected from what we don't call them dangers, we call them awarenesses, you know? So yes, you're not going to taste the poison oak. Not a good idea.
Not so much.
Don't be that curious.
I mean, that. So it's really, it again, we're speaking to the choirs when you take those four walls away. And I think we all need, we all know what happens. And there is this sense of sort of magic. But what I love about your book, and I love about this conversation, and that your book is about opening up a conversation. And that's clearly, and I hope that those that are listening are really thinking about how to make those connections, like just even with ourselves. But what about educators who feel those constraints by the standards and schedules? Is there, again, and you're talking about a much deeper connection. Are there simple ways that they can begin?
I think so, because like the truth of the matter is we're always in nature. We're always in nature because our body is nature. We're always in nature. You can, I do, and again, I don't, I'm not a teacher. I don't know what those constrictions are. So I'm speaking blindly about, but if there were a moment, you know, to just notice the relationship. All of the elements are in your body. Water, air, you know, sunlight, the minerals of the earth. So we're always nature. We are nature. And then we're always in relationship with nature because we're breathing air, you know, so we can always just attune to the nature that we're already in. It's really like breaking the idea of separation.
That's it.
And that's where I would be really curious. Like, I'd love to hear back from your listeners. What do they notice in their own mind? Like, how, what can you see in your own mind that keeps you feeling separate? Because again, going out of the doors of your room, great, but it's the doors in your mind. That's what I'm talking about. And I'm very curious with everyone what's in there. I mean, I have my one mind I can play with and see, and I can share that. But we all, I feel like the more that we share with each other, this is how I keep myself separate. This is the sentence, or this is the premise. We can dismantle each other's inner cage or doors, whatever.
And I guess what would be, I'm just thinking for my own self in terms of, okay, Victoria, how would I dismantle my own mindset, I guess, in terms of Would it be through journaling? Would it be sitting outside and journaling? Would it just be getting in touch with what I'm actually thinking and making that? Because it's really what separates us, and that process of discovering that. So it's really thinking about what that process would be. And I think it would be probably different for everybody, right? Because maybe everybody's mind is a little bit different. But
yes,
any tips that you can give even me?
Yeah. I mean, okay. So there's a chapter in the book. I forget exactly what I titled it. Crazy, silly, stupid. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Okay. So it's like when you are actually outside of this false paradigm, you're going to doubt yourself. Like, that's a good sign. That's a sign that you're on the right track. If you're feeling silly, if you're feeling like, is that possible? Like, mm-hmm. could I have actually seen that? You know, or am I making it up? That's where you know you're coming out of the delusion. And that happens, again, I want to reemphasize that what we're aiming for, again, is a relationship, kinship mm-hmm. with other than humans. And again, underscore, the other than humans are going to teach us how. It's not us.
Oh, yeah. Right. It's, yeah, absolutely.
Right. So, right, like one of the ways that we stay trapped is we keep going to...
We want to control it. We want to...
Yeah.
Here's the lesson and da-da-da. But it really letting go.
Yeah.
And being, just being in nature. And then it, almost hearing the whispers. I just got it.
Yeah. Yeah. Say more though. Would you say more about what you got?
I think it's being in nature. And so oftentimes when I'm in nature, I sort of hear whispers. Like if I'm struggling with a problem or something, or I go on a long walk, I'll hear kind of whispers, which sounds kind of kooky, but I think it's when I let go of whatever it is and I just lean into nature, the answers come. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you're talking. I think that's the bridge
mm-hmm.
that you're talking about is going into that space where you're just being rather than doing. And I think as educators, we tend to do and want to control. We want our class kids to be on desks, and even taking them outside makes them feel like, oh, I don't have the four walls to contain them. So it's a wonderful, wonderful, and again, your book is a wonderful introduction to a conversation.
Yeah.
About just that. And I love how you come from the angle of mental health and I come from the angle of education, and it's fascinating to, and now we have so many children that need mental health. I mean, we're in such a interesting space where I think education really needs to change, and we need to sort of have this type of marriage with nature where we can serve so many more people.
Yeah. And I think also really leaning into not just being, but listening to the other than humans as the wisdom keepers that they are. Mm-hmm. So let's say you hear the whispers and you get an answer. And then as a human being, if it were me, I might think, oh, I figured it out. Oh, mm-hmm. I figured it out.
Right, right.
Instead of, thank you, tree, for helping me. And what can I do for you in exchange? What can I give you back? You've given me the answer that I was looking for. What can I give you in return? And they will ask for something. Sometimes they say nothing. They don't need anything. Lots of times they say, I'm fine. Mm-hmm. Give me anything. It's the asking. Sometimes they want water. Sometimes they want weird things. You know, you can give them pieces of your hair. You know, there's a lot of nutrients in your hair. You can hold them. Again, giving love. I think there is a vibrational exchange. But to not always be so centered on ourselves and realize that if we do get an answer in nature, it wasn't us necessarily. Like, can we be humble enough to imagine that we were listened to, for one. Wouldn't that be amazing to know that the land around us knows us, cares about us, loves us, wants to help us, not just in the ways of giving us oxygen or food, but other ways, and then appreciating, showing our appreciation for what they give us.
And I think that just there's so much research on gratitude that to merge that with nature and to give back and actually say thank you is so beautiful, is such a wonderful message to incorporate into our practices as educators, and to really, because I don't think we are saving our earth. I think we are, you know, we're leaving our earth to our children in a very dire, I don't want to get depressing here, but we need to just simply, I love how you just so beautifully wove that in, that gratitude piece. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
And here's the thing too, which I kind of chuckle. I don't know what this feeling is that I have, but it's like, what broke us was this science. The rest of nature is not, you know, there's no animism anymore. Now we're going into hard science, and hard science is leading us back to the truth. Of course it does. Yes, there's research on gratitude and how important gratitude is. Oh, by the way, ask our Indigenous contemporaries.
Yeah.
How do you in right relationship?
Yeah.
Gratitude.
Yeah.
Oh, even science is going to show us the way home.
Yeah.
And it's for us to not shame ourselves out of what we know to be true in our heart, in our bones, in our blood, that we are grateful, and how good it feels to express gratitude for a tree that's giving you oxygen.
And do you see this type of thinking kind of moving into our schools, into our classrooms, into, I know you're coming from the mental health profession, but, you know, can you imagine, do you see that, or do you see, where do you see this maybe landing, maybe in the world of?
What I see, and okay, I'm not completely up to date, but what I've seen is that when this is entering into schools, it's sort of on the down low, where a teacher will do this without necessarily broadcasting it. Because as you said, you know, and again, it's like the top down is shaming this, or this isn't important, or whatever, you know, same with therapists. Like, it's very similar, where we need to be the answer holder, and we need to be in a room, and we need to, you know. So I think that it's been very, sort of Underground Railroad-ish, rescuing us.
I love that description, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't like the...
Right.
...that we have to do that, but I like that description, because that really gives a very
clear...
I'm curious, with your in terms of your own relationship with nature, did it change while you were writing this book?
Well, yes, because, you know, now I've been practicing this lifestyle for 9 years, and it's exponentially different.
Really? You
know, oh my gosh. Yes, because I'm learning more and more and more and more from all the different species, you know. There are some pretty common changes that happen immediately. I mean, I don't mean immediately like one time, although but it's like going, like I always say this, it's like going to the gym. Like for me, like I can know exactly how a treadmill works, and I know exactly how a treadmill will be good for me. But until I get on the treadmill, nothing changes in my body, right?
Right.
Same
right.
with this. Like it takes frequency and commitment and repetition, just like any relationship. Again, if we can demystify it, it's like if you want a relationship with a person, you have to hang out with them.
Right.
You have to talk to them. You have to listen to them mainly. If you have a relationship where you're just talking to the person, do you know them? No. Do you have a good bond? No. probably are going to burn them out and they're not going to want to talk to you anymore.
Yeah.
There has to be this listening, you know, who are you? What are your dreams? What are your hopes? What are your needs? And if we ask that to the other than humans, they have answers for us.
Mm.
So, yes, over time, it becomes more and more rich, more and more relaxed. So all the modern problems, anxiety, depression, whatever you're struggling with, go away.
Mm.
Not completely, but your baseline is back to normal. And then right. you can take care of whatever else much easier.
Yeah. You know? Can you share a moment when you experienced this nature embedded mind in a powerful way?
There's a lot of them. So let me I guess I'll just say, like, this was one where, again, it was a discovery for me. I was working with water. You know, I teach a course based on the book, and in the study cohort, everyone, including me, has a other than human partner. So going through the questions in the course with an other than human ally, helping inform our questions, answering our questions.
Hmm.
And so I was working with water and I was finding myself taking myself, I live near the ocean. I'm in Los Angeles. So go to the ocean. We have some lake bodies, you know, things like that. And then I was like, wow, I really have a whole different attitude to the water that comes out of my faucet. And
oh,
I was interesting. Like, why am I doing that? Like, why do I not revere the water coming out of the pipe? And again, I felt that sorrow. And then I thought about, wow, the water that's coming out of my shower is that ancient relative. What might that water want? And so I put flowers around the drain so that when the water came down, it's making contact with me, but it also had a chance to feel the flowers and then it's, of course, going back down underground into the pipe and just remembering to express the kind of gratitude I felt for the water who is now going to go back into a pipe, a reclamation plant. Like, that's a great sacrifice.
Mm. Wow, that's fascinating. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And to show love for it while I can.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is what you said, you know, sprinkling that peace on it, the love and the gratitude and in that process, which is so interesting. And it completely, just listening to the story changes the mindset of taking a shower. Something so simple that you do every day.
Right.
And kind of taking you into another space.
Yeah.
So interesting. And then to sort of, just for our listeners, to really think about, you know, simple ways that we can bring this concept and thought process and mindset to our children in our outdoor classrooms, which is such a interesting thing to think about. I could talk to you all day long. This has been absolutely incredible. But one of the things I love to ask, is there anything, before I ask the question, is there anything that you would like to share that I haven't touched upon before my final question?
Mm. I guess one of the things I want to say is maybe like a touchstone for people is to just think kinship, think relationship with any of it. You know, what is my like familial relationship with the air, with the water, with the trees? I keep saying that because the trees are out my window. So just keep thinking relationship, and that will do a lot to dismantle that separation and knowing that you can touch them.
Mm.
You can, you know, it's fine. There is no, don't touch, don't disturb it. You know, no, disturb it in a good way.
Right, right.
Yeah. And I think also just letting people know that these conversations are a jumping off point, and the practice is really where it comes to life. And I do have ways of helping people engage in those practices. So reach out to me. I'm at a point where I can just talk to people. You know, if you want to text me, email me, whatever, I will answer any questions and invite everyone into Experience Elemental, where these practices live. That's the house that they live under.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, because it is an embodied, embedded practice. It's not a mental exercise. We can think about it all day long.
Right, right.
Yeah. Change anything. Yeah.
I love. Wonderful. Yes, we will have all that information in the show notes. Is there one final seed of inspiration that you would like to leave our listeners with?
Yeah. This is an invitation. If you're curious to explore, walk out of doors and see what other than human being wants to play with you today.
Mm, I love that.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. And I love the fact that you used the word play,
mm-hmm.
which is a word that we talk about a lot in this community. So I cannot thank you enough for joining us. And again, I will leave all your information in the show notes. And I hope that we have some of our community reach out to you. And your book is absolutely a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful read. So The Nature Embedded Mind, I recommend highly for all those that want to read a good read and just to take your mindset to another. It really gets you thinking about differently about what we're all doing. So again, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Before you go, I want to share an invitation. If you are an educator who knows outdoor learning matters, but you want more structure, confidence, and support, the Outdoor Teaching Bootcamp might be exactly what you need right now. This is a 5-week online foundations course and is the first step in our Outdoor Classrooms Teacher Certification Program. Each week, we focus on one of the 5 phases of teaching outdoors, helping you build a strong, sustainable rhythm for your outdoor classroom. You'll get pre-recorded lessons inside a private portal that you can move through at your own pace, along with 5 weekly live Zoom sessions where we come together to reflect, ask questions, and connect with other educators from all over the country doing this work. If you're curious whether the bootcamp is the right fit for you, I'd love to talk to you. You can schedule a one-on-one discovery call with me, Victoria, and we'll think through it together. Head on over to our website to learn more, or we'll have the link in the show notes as well, and see when the next Outdoor Teaching Bootcamp cohort is opening. Thanks for listening and for the work that you're doing to bring learning back into the relationship with nature. So P.S., if you are a Circle member and you are interested in taking the Outdoor Teaching Bootcamp, you get $100 off the price. So there are huge discounts for joining our Circle membership community. So again, if you have any questions about this, schedule that one-on-one call with me, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Talk to you soon. Bye.